Bootstrapping, a Cobra Kai fanfic by Minocchio, read by GorillasGal86. Rating, explicit. Fandoms, Cobra Kai and Karate Kid. Relationship, Daniel LaRusso and Johnny Lawrence. Summary, in which the early 20s competing dumpster fires of Gotta Hustle Daniel and Gotta Take My Stepdad's Money and Burn It Johnny meet again. Chapter 36. On Sunday, Daniel kneels. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been, two or maybe 3 weeks since my last confession? Are you kidding me? I don't make a habit of keeping track of my parishioners' confession schedules. My place is not to judge, but assist you in penance. Nevertheless, the priest pauses and adds, a little stiffly, I believe it has been about 3 weeks. Right, 3 weeks. He falls silent, eyes focusing on the pattern of openings in the confessional screen. He listens to Father Hall breathe and shift as the silence lengthens. Daniel, asks Father Hall, your sins? If you came in here to pull my leg and tell me you have never done anything wrong, I will have to. I've bore false witness against myself, says Daniel. He can barely force the words out, and they only consent to emerge at a whisper. To my mother, and everyone, really. Everyone in my whole life. His mother hadn't come to church that morning. Oh, my son, says Father Hall. On Monday, Daniel kneels. I don't see them, he calls, shining the flashlight beneath the tool cabinet for good measure. No dice, no keys. Are you sure you checked your pockets? You were out smoking earlier, maybe they're in your jacket. I checked my fucking pockets, snaps Sean. He has dragged his hands back over his head without wiping them properly, and now his short, sandy brown hair is streaked and stiff with dirty oil. He curses and kicks the nearest stool, which spins a couple feet and tips over. Daniel sits back on his heels and cocks his jaw, looking around the garage. Has this ever happened before? What do we even tell the customer in situations like this? Sean's only answer is to give a long, loud groan and tip his head back. Boy, is Daniel glad he's not him. Though he's not looking forward to the second-hand crap Carl's probably going to send his way. One technician should not suffer for the iniquity of another, is all he's saying. Maybe we should check the floor grates, says Sean. How the hell would the keys have fallen in the grate? He demands. Like hell is going to go reaching down there. I don't know, Danny, but we're running out of time here, and I'm fresh out of ideas. Oi, morons, says Juan, leaning in through the door. He raises his hand, and from his index finger dangles a beautiful set of keys. Which one of you left these on the hood of the Geo out back? Oh, thank fuck, says Sean. Daniel rolls his eyes and gets up, clicking off the flashlight. On Tuesday, Daniel kneels. He hasn't washed his floors properly since he moved into this place, just swept and spot cleaned. And when he thinks about it, really thinks about it, that's probably pretty damn gross. Sure, he doesn't wear or allow shoes inside, but bare feet are plenty dirty, if not more dirty, or at least dirty in a different way. Oils from the skin and all that shit. He has nothing but time before his shift at the bar, so he gets to work. He scrubs every inch of his kitchen floor. Then he wipes away the film of dust that has settled in all the weird places he never thinks to look. The cabinet trim, and the little ledge in the doors that seems designed solely to be grimy to look at and difficult to clean. He takes what little he has in the way of baking supplies and cooking gear out of all the cupboards and wipes down the insides. Afterwards, he sits on the ground with his back against the oven and looks around his empty, quiet apartment, and he doesn't feel any more satisfied than before. On Wednesday, Daniel kneels. Johnny's cock is hard in his hand and flushed a pretty, pretty pink. He holds it up to his face, closing his eyes and focusing on the silky skin, the faintly salty smell of the head. The initial thrill of glory somehow hasn't waned even after weeks, the way his cock twitches at the first touch of Daniel's lips, the weight of it on his tongue. Johnny tells him it's all for him, and sure, Daniel believes him. Johnny falls apart above Daniel, spouting mindless praise. Whatever he thinks Daniel wants to hear. It should make him feel powerful, the way blowing him usually makes him feel powerful, like he's the one in control. But in the back of his mind, a voice says it's all an illusion, just another part of the sex. Johnny talks so much during sex and so little outside of it. Daniel rules him with an iron fist in all things except the ones that really matter. He can give him a hand, his mouth, his ass. This is all he can offer, or anyway, all Johnny wants to take. On Thursday, Daniel stands up. Chapter 37. Johnny comes into the bar, already drunk. Daniel is pulling drafts when he sees him, and in between slow blinks, the shape of him changes. He makes his way forward through the crowded room, a slight weave to his step, an automatic grin on offer for the girl he almost bumps into, which is met with a slight shake of the head, but also a tolerant smile. Will it be the same in a year? 5? How long before he ceases to be met with smiles? Daniel can picture an older Johnny too easily. Shoulders a little more slumped, grin less ready. Maybe he gets mean. More likely, he just gets sad. 20-something party boy losing the ability to attain cruising altitude. Until someday he stops trying to get off the ground. Daniel, says Michelle. He looks down. The pint he's holding is overflowing with beer. He hurriedly wipes the glass and serves it up, and then turns to wash his hands. When he looks around again, 2 people are waiting to be served, and Johnny has found a stool at the end of the bar. He smiles over at Daniel. There's a break in the crowd a few minutes later, and he walks over to him, wiping his hands on a dish rag. Johnny puts his forearms on top of the bar and leans forward with a dopey smile, angling for a kiss. Daniel indulges him. He pulls back after a couple seconds and says, "Drunk again, huh? You know, I would have thought, after you rolled your car a while back, that might have been a sign you were drinking too much." He taps Johnny's temple gently, pushing his head a little to the side. "Ever think of that? Hmm?" Johnny lets his head get pushed, but reaches up to grab his finger before he can keep doing it. "Of course I thought about it, and now I take a cab everywhere, so like, it's fine." He shakes his head and mirrors Johnny's posturing, putting their faces very close together. It's like a kiss. Except almost better, because he gets to keep talking. "You know, I'm starting to think you could be standing someplace holding the wrong end of a firework, and you'd find a way to say it's fine." But Johnny isn't really listening. He's too drunk and too distracted by Daniel's proximity. "Huh," says a deeply familiar voice. "Guess we found where Danny works." His stomach drops. He glances over and meets the eyes of Juan. Behind him, just stepping up with his mouth hanging open, is, of course, Sean. They both look worse for wear for drinks, because of course. Of course. "What the fuck?" says Sean. "The fuck would seem to be, he's a fag," says Juan, and it's almost worse coming in such a matter-of-fact tone. Johnny straightens on his stool, and Daniel automatically puts a hand out to forestall any further movement from that corner. Last thing he needs, Jesus. "Danny?" asks Sean. "You been a fag this whole time?" And the shock isn't long for the world, not when the revulsion is so ready to push it out of the way and come forward. He looks like he might stagger and fall. He clutches his own heart after a second and looks around wildly. "I shared cigarettes with him." "Oh. Oh, wow," says Daniel, rubbing his face. "Wow." "Juan, bro. Bro, I shared." "You can't pick up HIV from a cigarette," says Daniel dryly. It's good. He's pretty sure he doesn't sound at all like he wants to throw up. He flicks some fingers at Sean. "I mean, if that's where you're going with that." "HIV," says Johnny. "What the fuck?" What now?" asks Juan in a sidelong undertone to Sean. "Do we kick his ass?" "Go ahead and fucking try it," starts Johnny, trying again to stand up. Daniel gets a hand on his shoulder and forces him back down. "It's fine," he says. Then sharply, "Sit, man." "Daniel, do I need to call someone?" asks Michelle from a few feet away. "It's fine, I got it," he says over his shoulder, and almost as if they were responding to his words, the nearest bar stools are all mysteriously vacated in short order. It's distantly gratifying. Johnny looks a little mutinous, but mostly still drunk. He glares at Sean and Juan, hands and fist in his lap. For their part, they glare sort of confusedly back. A convention panel of idiots, and somehow he got stuck being the moderator. Daniel takes a measuring breath. He braces his hands on his hips. "Oh shit, he's totally gay. How do we not pick up on that?" whispers Sean frantically, and says with a calm he can barely reach with his fingertips. "You guys are not going to kick my ass. Not tonight and not tomorrow." "You think we're still going to work with you?" demands Juan. He pauses. "I mean, you're free to quit, of course."
"Why should we quit?" says Sean. "The moment Carl hears about this, he's gonna can your faggot ass anyway."
"If Carl hears about this, there's nothing really stopping me from spilling about all those parts that have gone missing this past year, is there?" The two men confer silently using just their eyes. Daniel puts his head back a little and adds, "Also, you should know I can kick both your asses up and down the street." The claim briefly shakes them out of their "aw shit, he's gay" stupor, and they make some familiar mocking noises. "Danny, hombrecito, I mean, come on."
"Stop,"
he says loudly.
"Jesus Christ, I mean it, guys, are you kidding me? You're like 35, you never work out, and you drink all the goddamn time. I know fucking karate. You want to test me. But I promise you, you'll both end up on your asses."
"You should have seen what he did to the two guys in here last month," says Johnny, helpfully. Juan frowns at him. Sean shakes his head. After an eternity, though, they both take a step back. "Come on, man, let's go," says Juan. "This bar sucks."
"I know, right?"
says a passing guy on his way back from the bathroom. Juan and Sean leave. And Daniel spends a few seconds breathing and realizing and adjusting. And all the while, Michelle's behind him, clattering with bottles and going,
"Hey, look at that! You can de-escalate.
Sorry about those guys. Guess they were your other co-workers? They seem like they kind of suck."
"Oh, okay."
Because Daniel is marching past the end of the bar and not fleeing to the back door at the end of the hallway. He wants some air. He wants a moment to think. He wants. Johnny follows him out. He probably thinks he's being supportive or something. He is wading right out into the riptide zone. And he is so stupid sometimes. Daniel doesn't have the emotional space to think about this right now. He keeps remembering the way they looked at him. These two guys he's known for a couple years, and barely tolerated on a good day. And here he is, shaken and unsettled. The idea of seeing them the next morning makes him feel queasy. The idea of going back day after day after day. Daniel laughs a little and says, "Well, that's that. No going back now. I mean, I guess I could get another job." He paces the width of the alley and casts Johnny a glance, but looks away just as quickly. "Is the future ever going to look like something other than shit?" he asks the pavement.
"Yes," says Johnny.
And he just had to speak, didn't he? Daniel rounds on him. "You're telling me you think about the future, really?"
He shifts.
"Why do you say it like that?"
"Nothing. No reason."
He waves an arm. "Okay, Johnny, go ahead. Tell me what you envision."
Johnny hesitates.
"I mean, I don't want to get ahead of myself."
"I'm asking you to."
He waits and adds, perfectly evenly, "Please." He looks like he wants to step forward and take hold of him. And everything would probably feel better if he did. Which Daniel isn't sure he wants right now. But maybe he has actually picked up on Daniel's mood, because he stays where he is beside the door. He rubs his hands on his jeans. Daniel waits.
"I guess. I figured, we'd move in together. Like, for real.
And maybe if we're splitting rent, you could quit one of your jobs, and then we just..." And he trails off, maybe because of the way Daniel is looking at him, and maybe because he doesn't know what else to say. Because he has nothing else to say. How does he go through the world like this? How does he get through the day? No real plan for himself, for his future, and he's somehow just fine with it. Daniel wonders if this is better or worse than having a plan and spectacularly failing to follow it.
"You want to know what my dream for the future was a couple months ago?"
he asks him. The words come out defeated, and Johnny doesn't look like he particularly does, but he shrugs and nods a little.
"It goes like this. I'm supposed to meet someone, a nice girl, right? And we're gonna settle down and have kids, and they're gonna be so happy. That's the plan. It's like a fucking relay race. My mom passed the baton to me, and so far I've done nothing with it. But I'm gonna. I have to make it, because if I don't, then what was the point? What was the point of feeling this bad all the time?"
"But you don't have to," says Johnny.
You don't have to feel bad."
"What?" says Daniel, exhausted.
"If I date you."
He stares at him, and Daniel knows that expression on his face. He's seen it too many times now. It's fear, but a specific sort of fear. Anticipated. Holding the wrong end of the firework. Like he's been waiting for this, but like an idiot, never let himself flinch. Johnny flinches now, shaking his head a little and taking a few steps back.
"Man, I I think I should.
You really gonna walk away from me right now, Johnny?
He asks, and it doesn't matter that it hurts to speak, or that he knows he must look stricken as he watches the other man. None of it matters, because Johnny isn't even looking at him, probably isn't really hearing him.
Think ahead, man. Where is that gonna get you? Do you think you can go home and maybe wait this out?
He almost laughs, and the impulse comes out as a stuttering exhale.
Come back around in a couple days, slip into my bed, and we'll just carry on.
Johnny stops backing up. He stares at the ground and says in a voice far too small for the size of him,
please don't do this. What do you think I'm doing exactly?
He asks with hollow curiosity.
He wishes he'd at least look at him, since he's so sure what he'd see.
I don't know. His hands flex in the air at his sides, grasping at nothing. He swallows and shakes his head a little.
Breaking up with me?
Several possible replies occur to Daniel. He could point out he's already been outed to his co-workers at the garage with him. He could tell him that some days he only makes it to the end because he knows he is going to be there. He could say, don't be stupid, Johnny. He goes with,
I used to scratch my head whenever you talked about those couple of days at your apartment back in 88. I didn't get it. How you could, or why, I guess. You'd think of it as anything more than a hookup that ended badly.
The seeming non sequitur works. Johnny finally looks up at him. He is a little confused, but as Daniel watches, his expression resolves. He says, sounding more sure of himself,
because it was more than that. We fit together. You have to feel that. I know you do.
Yeah, he says, agreeing. Johnny takes a breath.
Okay, so
it's a fantasy. Daniel thinks about reaching out to him, cupping his face to make him meet his eyes, but he can't seem to move.
Do you get that? This isn't a real relationship, Johnny. It is a fantasy. It's you coming into my crappy life and thinking you can fix it while completely avoiding thinking about your own.
That's not true, he says.
Why haven't you told me about your mother?
And Johnny half turns away then, like the question is a sucker punch. Daniel is just trying to have a goddamn conversation with the man, and he's making him feel like an aggressor for it. This only feeds his temper.
How did...
Your stepdad, he says tersely.
Well?
He chews on the words for a couple seconds, staring at the bricks of the alley. Eventually comes up with,
I didn't want it to seem like I was trying to score points with you.
Points. His jaw clenches.
Yeah.
Daniel takes a couple steps forward, tilting his head to try to catch his eye. Johnny glances at him from the corner of his eyes, follows it up with turning his face. He finally looks something other than scared, but it's nothing promising. He looks stubborn.
Points, bites out Daniel, are something you win in a game or a match, not in life. You don't conceal something like that from someone you're supposedly in a relationship with, so they don't know where you're coming from. It's not an omission at this point, Johnny. It's a lie. Do you even get that?
You kind of have a lot on your plate already. He shakes his head.
Don't turn this back around on me.
I'm not, he says.
I was trying to do the decent thing.
Bullshit. You were hiding from me.
Can you blame me?
Snaps Johnny. And there it is.
No,
says Daniel quietly after a moment.
I don't blame you.
They stare at each other,
And for maybe the first time, Daniel feels certain that Johnny is actually seeing him. But he has absolutely no idea what that means for them. Chapter 38. On Friday morning, he calls in sick again, and barely has the patience to listen to Carl hem and haw his way into not firing him. In the end, he doesn't, so Daniel figures Sean and Juan must have kept their mouths shut. Yippee. He stands on the massive, splendid front step of the massive, splendid house and tries not to fidget. It is kind of incredible that a mere stoop can make him feel underdressed, but that's the hills for you. Heaven forbid someone knock on a heavy, carved door and not be reminded that the shirt they're wearing came from Kmart. A voice in the back of his head is wondering if there's a service entrance to this place he should use. Another voice is telling that voice to shut the hell up for once in its fucking life. The door finally opens, and an older woman in a uniform looks out at him, inquiring. Daniel clears his throat. "Hi, I called ahead. A little bit ago, I'm Daniel Arusso. Is Mrs. Lawrence still up for a visitor?" He is led through the first floor of the massive, splendid house to a bright, airy room that during a normal time might have been used to entertain guests over tea or something, whatever rich people do. But at the moment bears the unmistakable signs of housing an invalid. Stacks of blankets, platters of picked over food, a certain quality to the air, the invalid herself. Up until the moment he crossed the threshold of the house, he still hadn't been sure this was a good idea. He hates hospitals, and some lingering memory of being a scared 8-year-old kid meant he had a swooping bad gut reaction at the mere sight of a hospital bed. But when he steps into the room and meets the eyes of Mrs. Lawrence, head wrapped in a scarf, face pale and drawn, he is relieved to feel nothing but the usual nerves that come with meeting someone's parents. "I thought you'd be shorter," she says after a moment spent observing him. His mouth hooks up, and he walks into the room properly. "I am actually the exact height of the average American adult male." "Oh, you read that in a book or something?" She looks past him. "Thanks, Denise. I'm fine for the moment." He glances over his shoulder to see the housekeeper withdrawing. He looks back to Mrs. Lawrence and flicks his hands out. "Doctor mentioned the statistic once, years back. My ma was a little worried about my height." The words come out normal, a relief. "Way John tells it, you're like Stuart Little with a bad temper." She watches him try not to react to that, and her eyes narrow. "Of course, that's when he's not making you out like Goliath. Sit, my God," she adds suddenly, waving a thin hand. "You're making me feel tired just looking at you. Do you young people sleep?" Daniel sits. He rubs his hands together. "Look, thanks for seeing me. I didn't want to bother you, and I get that this probably seems a little strange." Her eyebrows arch. "A boy showing up in the middle of the day at the sickbed of a woman he's never met." "No," she says, drawing the syllable out a little. She has the faintest trace of a drawl, and he wonders about it, about where she's from. "What's strange about that?" "That's a couch, not a bed," he says after a second. "Wow. Sorry, I'm not really at my best right now." "Join the club, kid. So, let's speak plainly with each other. Tell me, what is this? Did you get impatient? Or were you worried I'd kick the bucket before John finally invited you over?" He looks at her wry grin, a
a little uncertain. That second part, likely. You look a little rough. She gulps out a surprised laugh.
Oh, you're an asshole.
And she sounds a little delighted. He covers his face. His cheeks are hot beneath his palms.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. John was right. It's kind of funny. He drops his hands into his lap and tries to explain himself.
My dad, he passed when I was 8. I guess I get a little weird about it.
She sobers, laughter draining away.
Well, I'm sorry. John never said.
Yeah, well, I never mentioned it. He straightens on the edge of the chair, grimacing. Which I guess, maybe if I had, I don't know, maybe he'd get that I get it, you know?
He meets her eyes. How are you doing?
She waves a hand. My mother died of the same thing when she was 51. The doctors tell me I'm looking good to outstrip her if I take my vitamins. They probably both know there's no such thing as a sure thing when it comes to this. They let the moment pass.
Damn it,
she says suddenly, making a face and shifting.
Look, could you...
I just need this pillow adjusted. And you wouldn't believe how pathetic these limbs are lately. If you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, of course.
And he jumps up to help drag the pillow that had fallen to the side up, set it right against her back.
You need anything else? A blanket? Water?
Okay, easy, Florence Nightingale, she says, pointing to indicate that he should retake his abandoned seat. I might have the strength of a 2-week-old kitten, but I do own a rifle. She waves up at the ceiling.
Somewhere.
And I will get Denise to use it. I think that woman has a killer in her, deep down. He sinks back, presses his lips together to control the smile.
You giving me the shotgun speech? For Johnny? Man's 6 foot and knows karate.
He also once went away to summer camp and spent a week walking around on a fractured ankle without telling anybody it hurt. She informs him, and when Daniel winces hard,
yeah, exactly.
So you, Mr. LaRusso, are going to explain to me how you will not break my beautiful baby boy's heart, and you are going to make it good. He scratches his eyebrow with his thumbnail. Despite her joking words, Mrs. Lawrence looks very serious, and her eyes are a little tight in a way that makes him think of his own mother.
I'm trying not to, he says.
In the afternoon, he drives over to Mr. Miyagi's place without really thinking about it. It feels a little like being a teenager again, when it all had been so simple. If he was upset or happy or sad or excited, he'd go see Mr. Miyagi. The man is sitting inside when he rolls up. The doors to the house are flung open to let in the breeze, which seems like it'd be annoying since Mr. Miyagi is writing a letter. He has a paperweight pinning the pages he's already finished. He looks up over his reading glasses, surprised, as Daniel walks in and folds down along the other side of the table. Daniel nods at the pages.
Writing to Yuki?
Hi. He caps his pen and sets it down.
You not at work?
Nothing gets past you, huh? He takes his glasses off and folds them, and then pins Daniel with a look.
No.
Daniel sighs and flops a little dramatically over the table, forehead against the wood in his dismay.
I've made a mess of things, he mutters against the grain, and maybe ruined, like, my whole life.
Mr. Miyagi's voice is warm above his head, perfectly unconcerned for his friend's plight. Perhaps Daniel's son should flee country, become janitor somewhere, wait decades. When he return, won't seem like such big deal.
Daniel rolls his forehead along the table and squints up at him.
Help me buy the plane ticket?
He passes the table and stands. Come, we do kata, then you talk. Out back in the dojo, he moves with Mr. Miyagi beneath the afternoon sun. He thinks it's about more than just remembering the steps. It's about being open to the feeling of reaching for the center of himself and not fearing what he'll find. After, he wants to tell Mr. Miyagi about Johnny, but instead finds himself talking about the Second All Valley. He confesses his shame, his anger. He stumbles on the words but forces himself to admit he'd wanted the man who tried to destroy them both. It's not exactly the most ideal way to come out to someone. And Mr. Miyagi watches him for a long time afterwards. Daniel looks away, scuffling his shoe in the combed sand edging the garden. He swallows down at the ground.
I just don't know how I'm supposed to trust myself. I mean, look at what I chose.
Daniel-san chose principle, even before Silver revealed true face. Forget, Miyagi was at dojo that night.
Yeah,
he says, shaking his head.
Yeah, but even after that, how could I want?
He reaches out and wraps the top of his head. Daniel jerks back, hand coming up to rub his hair.
Hey!
Want, not action, he says, a little impatient. Desire, not choice. Daniel-san, choose. He tilts his head up to gaze around the garden, and he probably thinks he looks serene, but frankly, he just looks kind of smug.
Now, model athlete friend. Like Silver?
Daniel snorts before he can help it.
No, not even close. Johnny can barely follow the plot of a Sunday comic.
He pauses.
Not that he's, stupid, like mentally deficient, medically speaking. He's just simple, uncomplicated.
Good. Daniel-san complicated enough on own. Daniel rubs his head again and allows his mouth to curl up.
Yeah, I guess.
It's the end of the semester, and the bar is already packed when he arrives 10 minutes early for his shift. Finals are ongoing or over. Winter break is looming. The student population is merciless in their feverish desire to obliterate their better senses, and they don't care if they have to get through Daniel and Michelle to do it. Daniel ties his apron around his hips and looks over to the front door at the empty stool. He looks around at Michelle, who is pouring a line of shots and already looks harried.
Johnny not show up yet?
She only shakes her head and moves to shift the shots up the bar, and there's no time to talk. So Daniel steps past her and nods at a waiting customer.
What'll it be?
The evening shift kicks off, and the stool by the door remains empty. Chapter 39. It is some kind of special hell, perhaps one reserved for queer Catholics who always lose patience and skip on the rosary. His barely born relationship might have been foundering on the rocky shoreline of his own temper and Johnny's carelessness. And he is stuck making fucking cosmos and whiskey sours for drunk coeds. It is a few hours into their shift and Johnny is still a no-show.
This tastes funny,
says the guy he served 10 seconds or half an hour ago. Daniel doesn't know. They all look the same from behind the bar. Daniel pauses in collecting a pair of empty glasses. He looks at the mostly empty pint being waved in his face.
What was it?
Natty ice. He narrows his eyes.
Well, what did you expect?
Anyway, the guy fucks off. Daniel puts the glasses in the sink and swipes the damp glass napkins into the garbage. And then, as always, there is someone else waiting to be served. Johnny didn't say anything to you, did he? He asks Michelle a while later, passing her on the way back from the fridge, hands clutching a pair of Sierra Nevadas. Told you, he didn't come in today.
I meant last night.
You mean after you stormed back in?
Didn't see him.
Damn it. Overhead, distinctive drums begin loudly pounding through the bar's speakers. Michelle makes a slight face at him. Fucking Roxette, again.
Love this song,
sighs a girl standing a couple feet away at the bar. She bobs her head to the beat. And no, there are limits to everything under the sun, and there is definitely a limit to how many times he will be forced to listen to this song. Daniel, says Michelle, warning, but he pays no mind. He rounds the bar, squeezing through the press of customers, and marches across the room to the jukebox. The Swedish chick is halfway through bemoaning her lost love when he reaches down the back and yanks the cord out with prejudice. The music over the room abruptly dies. Bliss.
Hey, I paid for that!
Wails a girl, and he rounds on her, plug still in hand. He waves it.
People with crap taste don't get jukebox privileges.
God, I hate this bar, says the girl's friend, wrapping her mouth around the straw of her cocktail. Michelle shakes her head as he returns to the bar.
You act like this, and yet people still keep coming in here. Why do you think that is?
He glares out over the room, the stubbornly boyfriend-deficient room.
Isn't it obvious? It's because we're hot and people are stupid.
She opens her mouth, her impulse being as always to argue with him. But after a second, she raises her chin and smiles a little.
I can accept that logic.
It's a little past midnight, and he has spent an hour plotting in detail out how he is going to drive over to Johnny's apartment after his shift and give the man a piece of his mind. The importance of not ditching work on one of the busiest nights of the year being one topic. The extreme cowardice of hiding from one's boyfriend after one measly fight being another. He focuses on this in his anger, because it is easier than contemplating the alternative, that Johnny might be giving up on him. Then he overhears someone mention seeing that bouncer guy drunk at some other bar. He turns and leans forward.
Wait, what did you say? You saw the bouncer?
The girl who'd spoken looks at him warily, and he does his best to relax his face and remember how to look like a human being.
Yeah?
She says after a moment. She fiddles with her drink, turning the glass in her hands.
I mean, I think it was him. Does he still work here or what? He usually cracks a lame joke about my ID photo, and I kind of missed it tonight.
He definitely lends a much-needed lighter quality to the place, agrees her friend, eyeing Daniel with a thoroughly unimpressed expression. Daniel makes himself smile.
When was this? How long ago? Can you tell me the bar?
I don't know. The girls exchange glances.
Half an hour?
It was O'Malley's.
He nods quickly. Thanks. Really, thanks.
He turns and locates Michelle and approaches her, hands going back to untie his apron.
I gotta go. Johnny's down at O'Malley's. I have to go find him.
She sets her half-prepared drink down on the bar and rounds on him.
How about no? You absolutely do not?
She watches him untie his apron and her eyebrows slam down.
Daniel! It's the last night before people start going home for winter break. You cannot leave me here alone.
He looks at her, grimacing. He takes off the apron.
Don't you know where he lives? She tries, tone insistent. Just find him later. Oh my God.
Yeah, but this is more.
Fuck his life very much.
Romantic.
Tracking him down shit-faced in some bar is romantic?
Well, not when she puts it like that.
Yes.
I don't care,
she says sincerely. She gives him a sweet smile.
I'm serious. You leave this bar right now, and I promise you, you're getting fired.
He hesitates, and then under her disbelieving eye, he starts backing away.
You romantic bastard, she says. I fucking hate you. Not as much as I hate myself.
He shouts over his shoulder, and he's gone. The neighborhood is like a war zone, thick with staggering, screaming groups of people and cruising patrol cars. The former don't walk fast enough, and the latter are probably dying to stop and ticket him for jaywalking. Goddamn Los Angeles traffic laws. Daniel reaches O'Malley's, squeezing through the narrow walk space between the bar and booths lining the hole-in-a-wall room, but he sees no Johnny. It's the worst kind of anticlimax, one paired with garish green neon lights and the beginning thuds of Roxette in the corner.
Hey,
he asks the bartender, leaning forward between two disgruntled drunk guys to catch his attention.
Hey, did you see a guy in here recently? Tall, blonde, probably really drunk.
The bartender shrugs at him, nonplussed.
You could have just described half the guys that came in tonight, man. I don't know. They all look the same to me.
Daniel subsides. He looks around one more time and then gets out of there quick. He can't think of a worse place to feel alone in than a fake Irish bar. On the sidewalk outside, he glances at the people standing around talking and smoking, lets their enthusiastic, drunk chatter slide over him. He looks at the pizzeria and wine bar across the street. He looks at the two bars on either side of O'Malley's. One is called the Corners, the other the Fat Pickle. Both look deeply gross.
Fuck it,
he sighs, and walks into the Fat Pickle. Five bars and two renditions of Roxette later, and Daniel lucks out. In an unassuming bar with an unknown name on the edge of the neighborhood at 1:30 in the morning, he finds Johnny. It's mostly dead inside, and Lionel Richie is singing Easy from the jukebox at a reasonable volume.
Finally, Daniel thinks, a bar for goddamn adults.
His feet are aching from his shift, and then the couple miles he must have trekked looking for this moron. He sidles up to Johnny at the bar, perches on the stool next to him, and says, buy you a drink, Lawrence?
Okay,
says Johnny, and then he glances over at Daniel, brow knitting uncertainly.
What? What are you doing here?
Like maybe Daniel is there for a different oversized ex-karate champion. Hi, says Daniel to the bartender. He'll have a water. Thanks.
Cheap,
mumbles Johnny, dragging his half-empty beer closer to his chest, as if he thinks Daniel is going to reach over and steal it. And you know, he just might. But not yet. Wouldn't want to take the guy's security blanket away all at once. The water arrives, and Daniel thanks the bartender. He props his elbow on the bar and gazes at Johnny, who glances at him from the corner of his eye and sips his beer.
How's the world's most pitiful bar crawl treating you?
He asks.
Great, says Johnny. I'm having so much fun, can't you tell?
Well, hey, at least you didn't get into a fight.
Night's still young,
he says stubbornly. He still won't turn and look at him. Daniel glances around, but the place is still deader than dead. He shifts on his stool and nudges his knees up against Johnny's.
Johnny looks down at it, and Daniel watches his mouth pinch and curve. Sad smile for a sad moron. It's incredible what this is doing to his chest right now. I thought of another thing, Johnny says, a little thickly. He gestures with his beer and nods at the air. Future things, plans. You asked last night. I forgot one. Daniel puts his chin in his hand and makes an inquiring noise. Johnny sneaks another glance at him and says, "You probably won't like it. Try me." He waits another couple seconds, hand weaving and correcting. "I want to go on a gay cruise." Daniel loses control of his smile, and he has to smother it with his hand, lest the other man think he is laughing at him, which he absolutely is, but he doesn't want it to be misinterpreted. Tender is the heart of a drunk Johnny and all. "I see." Johnny scowls. "Okay, so it's not a big important thing like you were saying. I'm sorry I haven't considered stock options and picked out schools for the kids. I don't see why planning for the future has to be all the shitty, boring stuff and none of the fun stuff." "Mmm," he says. "I mean," Johnny continues, finally turning on his stool. He overbalances a little and catches himself on Daniel's thighs. "Sad." He shakes his head, blinking. I forgot what. "You were telling me why your refusal to plan for the future is actually really charming. An irresistible display of devil-may-care attitude." Daniel leans back to counteract the weight, but reaches down to hold his wrists. Johnny leans on him more heavily, his hair falling into his eyes. "Is it? Is it what?" he asks. "Irresistible." Daniel gives up and reaches to comb his hair back from his forehead. "Not exactly, but somehow my defenses have been weakened anyway. Persistence. They should put you on an inspirational poster." The bleary, hopeful blue eyes come up to meet his. "Are you saying yes to the gay cruise?" "I'm saying." He doesn't know what he's saying, but who cares? "Maybe it's all right if we figure it out together, as we go along. But for now, drink your water, Johnny. I'm going to take care of you." Chapter 40, Election Eve, 1992. Checking balance, $700 or $800, something like that. Cash on hand, haven't counted. Rent due, Daniel knows. He gets home from work Monday night and makes himself wash the dishes from the night before. He takes a long shower, robotically washing off the sweat and dust from the day. He feeds Roxanne. His stomach growls and he looks around for Daniel before remembering he said he'd be home late. "Dinner's in the fridge," he'd said, and then listed off special instructions for reheating, like Johnny wasn't just going to shove a plate into the microwave and hit the all-purpose reheat button. If Daniel wanted his cooking to be prepared and enjoyed properly, he shouldn't abandon him to go gallivanting off around the valley, harassing people about democracy or whatever. He carries the food over to the sofa and turns on the television. He sighs. "Do you think I should quit my job?" he asks Roxanne. She does not answer, but nudges around her plant in what he thinks is a supportive manner. "Maybe they should get a dog. Roxanne's great, but it's not the same as having company." The murmuring of the television somehow only serves to highlight how empty the apartment is, and Johnny thinks a dog could fix that. He's never had a dog before, but how hard can they be? Who's he kidding? Daniel will never accept a dog into his heart. He'll stand there with his hands on his hips and list off all the dog-related chores, and who's going to do them? And yeah, Johnny doesn't particularly want more work, so okay, they aren't getting a dog.
Fine, Daniel. Have it your way again.
Johnny slouches down further on the sofa and glares at the TV. He lifts the remote and changes the channel, and that's how the next couple of hours go, mindless and slip-sliding the rest of his freedom away until it is time to go to bed and get up and do it all again. A little after 8, he hears the jangle of keys being inserted into the door, and he can't help but perk up a little. The key turns, pauses, and he can't hear Daniel sigh, but he can imagine it. The key turns again, this time the other way.
"You didn't lock the door again,"
is his beloved's piss-poor greeting. Johnny looks over.
"I never agreed to do that," he points out.
"Someone told him it's important to hold the line in relationships, because if you're not careful, the other person will walk all over you."
Daniel needs to remember who he's dating. "I mean, if someone breaks in, I can take them."
Thump, thump, go Daniel's shoes by the door, and then he's crossing the room, and headed straight into the bathroom.
"Right? Fine.
And probably trash the place while you're taking them, right?
Anyway, it's not breaking in if they can just walk in."
Calls Daniel through the half-closed door as he pisses.
"And if it's not breaking in, the rental insurance people will probably refuse to honor a claim."
Johnny is feeling worse by the second.
"Rental insurance? It's like..."
"How was your day, honey?" he says, trying to lay the sarcasm on thick. He's not as good at it as Daniel. The bathroom door opens fully, and Daniel says, "It was good." And then he's crossing over into the bedroom, and fine. He keeps talking loudly from the other room. "The canvassing was a little weird after dark. Don't think people like opening their doors to some stranger with a flashlight. But I found a couple people who didn't know where their polling place was, so that's good."
"Yeah, good,"
mutters Johnny. He decides to ignore Daniel and go back to his TV. Who needs a hello kiss? Not him.
"Hey, we still on for watching The Returns with Laura?"
asks Daniel.
"I can't wait to see Sid's fucking face when California flips blue. 12 years of Republicans driving this country into the ground, and people are finally waking up. And yeah, okay, Clinton's, well..."
"Don't think I trust Bill Clinton," says Johnny.
"Anyway," continues Daniel brightly, "Michelle says Hillary is going to get us universal health care."
Johnny narrows his eyes at the TV.
"Especially don't trust Hillary."
"Did you register to vote?" asks Daniel, finally coming back out. He's changed into a pair of sweats and a t-shirt.
"Yeah?"
says Johnny, who absolutely hasn't.
"Course. Duh."
Daniel gives him a skeptical look and sits on the end of the sofa. He reaches automatically for Johnny, who is easy. He's too easy. He immediately drops the remote on the floor and turns to hug him around the middle and bury his face in his lap.
"How was your day?"
asks Daniel after a moment, hand coming up to run through his hair.
"I think I want to quit my job,"
he mutters into the soft cotton of his thigh. Daniel's stomach hitches slightly on a withheld laugh.
"Ah, Mondays."
"No," says Johnny, burning a little with the feeling his pain is being mocked. He frees his mouth and twists around so he can look up at him.
"Not Mondays. Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thurs."
"I'm familiar with the work week," says Daniel, amused. "But thanks." He squeezes his eyes shut.
"It's the worst. It's so boring, and the foreman's a dick. And I just can't think that this is what my life is supposed to look like. Like, no way."
Says Daniel. "Well, until I make it big and can afford to keep you in the lifestyle to which you're accustomed."
"Why are you so mean?"
wonders Johnny.
"Aren't you supposed to get this and, like, sympathize?"
"Johnny, I am sympathizing. You're lying on top of me, and I'm letting you whine while I pet your hair like you're my depressed puppy. What do you want from me?" Disgruntled, Johnny twists again so he's looking away, off the couch at the TV.
"Oh, come on," says that annoying voice.
He jostles Johnny's head.
What? A blowjob? Would a blowjob make you feel better?
No,
he says, and really, he might make his point better if he stopped lying on the other man. But there are limits to his commitment to his bad mood. Except Daniel always has to escalate things, and he hauls and pushes Johnny up off him. What's Johnny gonna do? Resist? This whole evening has sucked. Maybe he should just go to bed. Daniel kneels up on the cushion next to him and gets his hands on his face, makes him look at him. He is holding his mouth slightly crookedly, poorly concealed amusement, but his brown eyes are warm on Johnny's. Look, he says, if you really hate it that much and don't think it's gonna get better, start looking for a new job and quit this one. And what if there's no job I like? Asks Johnny ominously. Not the end of the world. You'll find something you can put up with, and hey, he says, leaning forward and kissing his temple, his cheek, his lips. You still got me, right? He finally gives up on his bad mood and surrenders himself to Daniel's kiss. Yeah, I got you. The end.